In the season premiere of Studio Inter, we'll be analysing Inter's Mercato together with David Amoyal from GianlucaDiMarzio.com. We'll be analysing the Cagliari match. We'll be analysing the Lecce game, this week's Moji, Moratti and Frog, and much, much more. Everything here on Studio Inter, only on SempreInter.com.
Recupera Brozovic, andiamo in contropiede, la porta è vuota, tira, attenzione, è gol, è gol!
Benvenuti, bentornati to a new season of Studio Inter. I am your host Nima Tavallo Iruzzari, wishing you all welcome to what we hope is a successful season, at least it certainly started that way. And I'm also joined by three of my regular panelists, are SempreInter.com's own preview writer, Mr. Mohamed Nassar, all the way back from Egypt or in Dubai. I can't remember what you said. Welcome, Mo.
Thanks, guys. Great to be here. Great. Super excited for the new season. So, yeah, let's get this started.
Yeah, can't agree with you more. And we are also joined by the host of the Alex Dono Show, the best friend of @RealDonJNLE, Mr. Alex Dono.
Happy to be back. It was a very exhausting transfer window, an exhausting summer, but I'm just glad the games are here.
Amen to that. And speaking of exhausting transfer windows, this man is a hero. He's been covering the exhausting transfer window, Inter's transfer window, together with myself on SempreInter.com. Welcome, Mr. Will Beckman.
Good evening. Thank you for that, Nima. It was quite an experience this summer. I hope everyone's in a good mood. Hope everyone enjoyed Liberation Day yesterday on Monday, and liberation from them, that is. Buon campionato.
Exactly, but it definitely was Liberation Day for Mercato, and it was good to get going, and we got going against Lecce. But before we get into all of that, I thought we'd start with a little bit of a Mercato analysis, and I'm going to quickly go around the table and asking you all to give your classic grades of 1 to 10 of Inter's Mercato. And a brief explanation why you give that mark. And I'd like to start with you, Mo. 1 to 10, and why?
So I think the Mercato in general needs to be analyzed in light of for two seasons now we've been unusually to Inter's history, we've been buying players that have fit the manager's desires. And I think this Mercato should be seen only in light of Conte, because if you get in, Lukaku and the Sanchez and the Sensi and the Barella, you probably give this team's chances of competing for a Scudetto, 40% or 30% or whatever. But because we have Conte, and this is part of a comprehensive strategy, and these are players that have been handpicked by him, and part of a way to revolutionize and rebuild the squad in his own model, I think I'm quite bullish on the Mercato, and I think I rated higher than last year's, which I had then rated quite highly, I think at a 7.5. So I think with Conte, I think this is an 8 out of 10 Mercato.
Interesting. What about you, Alex? What rating do you give?
I go 8.5 out of 10, and the cherry on top, of course, was Icardi heading to PSG and Wanda heading to PSG at the deadline. I thought that really added a nice exclamation point. A lot of needs taken care of, a lot of players brought in who fit the Antonio Conte system and really fit his vision for how to build this club. And of course, if you include Conte himself, I know that wasn't a player transfer, but a big time acquisition for head coach. I think maybe the only thing that could have bumped this up to a 9 or a 10 would have been a really big named midfielder brought in. But, based on the way Stefano Sensi has looked so far, he's been maybe the most impressive, pleasant surprise for any team in the Italian transfer window, because when he was acquired early in the window, you're thinking, this might be the Borja Valero replacement. And instead, it's going to be really hard to take him out of the starting lineup. You'll have to drag him kicking and screaming out of Conte's starting 11. So I'm really happy. And of course, you have players who still need to prove themselves. Lazaro comes to mind. Of course, Alexis Sanchez. We've not seen, you know, what he can do under Conte just yet. So there are some question marks, but I'm really happy with it.
What about you, Will? What rating do you give?
I give it 8. Signed with Mo. This has been a very different Mercato to previous years because it's been revolution, not evolution. And I don't remember the last time Inter had a true revolution. It was necessary. I think this group had shown that it couldn't do anything more than scrape a fourth place finish. And the only way to change that is to get rid of the people that have been leading the team. And they've done that. They've gotten rid of Icardi. They've got rid of Perisic. They've got rid of Nainggolan. Obviously, they haven't actually sold any of them, but you know, given the conditions that were created, it was always going to be difficult to get brilliant deals. The important thing was to get rid of them because that was the only way that any true progress was going to be made. So that's the best thing that's happened in this window. The three potential troublemakers that we heard so much about last year have been gone. That seemed to be a red line for Marotta and Conte, and they've got it done. So that's the best thing that's happened. The other good thing that's happened is that Conte has got most of his targets. We know that he doesn't like not getting most of his targets. He can get a little bit grumpy behind the scenes. So I'm glad that that's happened. I think only Dzeko is really and possibly Arturo Vidal could be on the list of targets that he didn't secure. So those are big pluses. We've added experience with Diego Godin. That's a huge signing in the dressing room as much as it is on the pitch. Lukaku is about as good a replacement for Icardi as you could have hoped to get, and we got him for a good price. Sanchez is a fascinating signing that I hope goes well, and I think will go well because of Conte's ability to remotivate and to resurrect people. Barella and Sensi are good in midfield. Who else have we had? We had Lazaro, who's going to add hopefully a bit more quality going forward on the right. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like they've had a shrewd window, as Conte said, before the Cagliari match on Friday. Which is good. They knew what they were going to get, and they went out and they went out and did it. In terms of negatives, we're missing a midfielder unless Barella explodes. There's a lot of pressure on him to provide goals from midfield. Otherwise, that's going to be an issue if we're talking about Inter as a Scudetto chasing side. And I suppose we kind of have to, given everything that Conte said since he arrived. We didn't get many big sales. You know, lots of players went on loan. It was only really Puskas and Caramo. But given that didn't prevent the signings that we wanted coming in, it's not a big problem. And as you also have to bear in mind that that's been a problem across Europe. You know, there's a lot of clubs who've failed to really sell this summer. That was the real trend across the Mercato this summer. But in general, very good. Thumbs up to Marotta on his first Mercato. You know, he's proven his calibre, really, by managing two extremely difficult situations. The first one with Lukaku, when it looked like Juventus had done a checkmate on him, he managed to get a good deal for that when it looked like everything had slipped away. And obviously he got rid of Icardi, and he didn't just get rid of Icardi, he got rid of him abroad.
We'll get to all of that. Let me finish,
yeah. Nima, okay?
Yeah. You don't need to say everything you was charged up 3 months in one go. We it's an hour's show, so we need to spread it out a little bit. So we're going to get to all of that. So don't run through all the content at once. Save a little. For me, it's very simple. I give an 8 because I always do. Everyone who listens to the show knows that whenever I, my way of grading the Mercato is I give 1 grade for the players in, I give 1 grade for players out, I divide it, and that's what you get. I give 9 for in, 7 for out, divide that by 2, that's 8. That's why I reach 8 for all basically all the reasons that you guys have already given. But we'll get into that more than that, because we're now what I want to hear now is the opinion of our guest and good friend. He's the host of the excellent Calcioland podcast. He's the English manager of Gianluca Di Marzio. He writes excellent columns on The Athletic, on ESPN, and God knows where else. Welcome back to the show, one of our more popular guests, Mr. David Amoyal.
Real pleasure to chat with you guys. Thanks so much for having me on, and ciao to all the listeners.
Well, I thought I'd first I'd let Will if you had a question for David.
I do. Hi, David. Thanks for coming on. I wanted to start with something that I just mentioned about the way that Inter handled their three open speech marks, troublemakers, closed speech marks, Perisic, Nainggolan, Andy Cardi. They've sold all three on loan, and they've been very clear from the start of the summer that they were intending to get rid of them. I was just wondering what you thought of that sort of extremely clear approach that they had. You know, it didn't necessarily help them in terms of negotiating, but then on the other hand, you've got the argument that, you know, it has to be a clear line. You have to be clear that, you know, a lack of commitment or a lack of professionalism, whatever, isn't the right way to go. So I just wondered what you thought of that strategy and whether that was the right way to go for them this summer.
Well, the first thing that stands out to me is this isn't the Inter we all grew up with in a lot of ways. You know, we always associated Inter with the insane running the asylum. The Pazza Inter thing has been kind of like the brand of the club in good and bad. And I think we saw a clear break from that. So I think it was the right decision to do when you have a manager like Conte, who we know wants to put the group above all else. You look at Conte's track record, both with the Italian national team and even at Chelsea, did very well. Maybe not focusing on the most talented players, but the ones that wanted to be there. So to me, in that context, makes a lot of sense. I think Inter showed a lot of strength, especially with the Icardi one, you know, never budging, sticking to what they said they were going to do. So I think it's really quite the statement. And the last thing I'd say is kudos to Inter, because they got rid of him on loan, and that goes to show how well they operated the rest on the transfer market. They've been shrewd for a while, constructed deals in ways where they could afford to let them go on loan without getting any return and just to get rid of them. So to me, it's a huge win, without a doubt.
Yeah, well, I was curious, David, because to me, maybe the most interesting acquisition was Alexis Sanchez. And I think we could probably agree, very low risk signing. But I'm curious as to what you think his ceiling could be under Conte, and maybe how optimistic Interisti should be about this deal.
Well, look, I think you said it best. Really low risk, high reward. Look, you know, if you're Alexis Sanchez, I don't think it can get any better of a situation to turn your career around. You're returning to Serie A, where he's done very well at Udinese. He's going to play in that same exact formation where he became a huge household name, playing in that 3-5-2. He's playing for a manager that is the master of reclamation projects. I mean, just look at how Candreva has been performing to start the season. You know, if Alexis Sanchez has like maybe 70% of the turnaround we've seen from Candreva right now, that deal's a home run. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think both for Inter and Sanchez, and I think even for Manchester United, you have to look at it. Okay, this is really the best place for him to try to get his value back. So, I really don't see really any downside to this. I mean, granted, they are paying a substantial wage, but they got him on a, you know, a loan. So no, I'm with you. I think it's a shrewd move. Even if it doesn't work out, they really didn't risk hardly anything.
I couldn't agree with you more there. Mo, did you have a question for David?
Seeing that, at least in my opinion, the forward lines of both Inter and Juventus, and possibly even Napoli, are comparable in terms of quality of player. Looking at post-summer transfers, between Juventus and Inter, who do you reckon fared better in midfield and defense? Is Inter's defense stronger than how weak Juve's midfield is, or vice versa? Who do you reckon wins out in both these lines at the end of the summer mercato?
I think that's a very interesting question. So look, Inter, so let's look at Juve. So Juve's midfield compared to Inter's defense, kind of. So I'll say Inter had the most clean sheets in Serie A last season. They had Diego Godin. They had Conte, who is probably, I would say, is fair to say, is more defensive-minded than Spalletti. To me, especially with what we've seen in the first few matches, Koulibaly, Manolas, they're going to be a lot better, but you got to feel really good about that. Juve lost Chiellini, but this is why they brought in De Ligt and Demiral. As far as Juve's midfield, like I think for Juve, really, it really comes down to what are Ramsey and Rabiot going to contribute. I think Rabiot has a lot of potential, looked pretty good in the summer friendlies. Ramsey, in a lot of ways, can bring the things that Juve has lacked since Marchisio's last knee injury. But Ramsey is injury prone as well. I'm not a big Pjanic guy, but he seems to have done pretty well in this new system. And then the other key is Khedira. You know, Juve Twitter hates him, but I'm not surprised that another manager fell in love with him. I think Sarri has been praising him all summer. I think he's one of those players where you watch him in person, it really stands out to you much more in TV. So I would say Inter's defense is more of a sure thing. Juve's midfield has a lot of upside. I will say, bigger picture, when I look at Juve and Inter, I mean, Inter's going through a lot of changes. That would really be my only reservation. I really love everything that Inter did this year. Juve did go through changes, but there's still that very strong infrastructure that supersedes even Sarri that is still there. I mean, we know they can gut out wins. Inter's starting to show that. So I think, if anything, Inter definitely bridged the gap. I think they are maybe one great player away from being right there with Juve, though.
Right. We've got, as always, David, when you're on, we put out that you're coming on, and they're just, it's just, we just have a, like a flood of questions coming in. I tried to sort them out because a lot of them are similar.
Great.
We're coming from at Yes That Andre on Twitter, who asks, of the two games played thus far, which player has impressed you the most? That means both new and old, out of both of the entire squad, no matter if they're new or old.
Well, I think Sensi is the easy answer out of the new ones. He's been really sensational. I think, look, even the people that like Sensi, like I did, I don't think even his biggest supporter could have expected him to get off to such a good start in preseason. And now, of the veterans, I think Kondreva is a pretty easy answer as well, although Brozovic has played well. I think, you know, last season, I always felt that as Brozovic went, so did Inter. If Brozovic had a good game, Inter would usually win. If Brozovic, the few times he struggled, those were usually Inter's worst performances. But I will say, as my friend Andrew Barker tweeted, I don't know if it was to one of you guys, and she said, you know, what's really interesting is Sensi and Brozovic are pretty similar in style of play, but they seem to have really opposite personalities and kind of MO. And I think that's really a great description of the two. And that's why I kind of think it works well. So I'll pick those two.
Hakim Kabaj on our on the SempreInter.com community Facebook group asks, do you think Inter has a realistic chance to sign Sergej Milinkovic-Savic in the next transfer window?
Yes and no. I mean, look, we know Inter and Lazio have done business, Hernanes, Kondreva, but I wouldn't say those were players that had a big market abroad. I get the vibe, you know, that Milinkovic-Savic really likes it at Lazio, didn't push to leave. I'm not sure if he's one of those players that goes as far as saying, well, if I'll play in Italy, I'm just going to play for Lazio. But I wonder if Lotito, in his mind, is like, you know, if I get a big offer abroad, I'd much rather send him there. So I wouldn't exclude it. And man, you add Milinkovic-Savic to that, that's absolutely filthy. So I wouldn't write it off altogether. But I still think once Pogba leaves Man United, it really wouldn't surprise me if Milinkovic-Savic goes there.
A lot of questions are about Milinkovic-Savic, and Joe Debono asks us if you think was it plausible to those rumors at all? Were they realistic? Or, and he has a very specific question. He says, "How? I mean, I know you don't like to comment on the work of others, so I'm going to rephrase what he's written here. But basically, he's saying that was there, in truth, was it realistic to think that Gagliardini and or Politano plus cash for Milinkovic-Savic, or was that just, you know, talk?
I mean, I'll say this. When I hear that, Gagliardini and Politano, look, and I like Politano. I think Gagliardini is pretty decent. I think if he's your first midfielder off the bench, you're in pretty good shape. But I don't know. That, to me, sounds like confusing Lotito for Preziosi, maybe. So I don't know. I mean, I'll just tell you this. You know, I know Fabrizio Romano, rightfully this summer, really got a lot of praise, did amazing work. And him and I chat once in a while. And he was pretty confident all along that Milinkovic-Savic wasn't going to leave. So I don't I don't think it ever was that close, to be honest. I think Juve had agreed to terms with Milinkovic-Savic, but Lotito just despises him, came out publicly saying, I don't like how Juve operates. And I think that's as close as an Italian team came to him. I've noticed that every time a team makes a huge signing, like after the Lukaku deal, and this isn't true, it's just true for a lot of teams, not just Inter, right after, there's already a huge other name linked to them. Like Juve signed De Ligt the next day, people were asking me about Neymar. So I think it kind of falls into that, with all due respect to people that reported different.
Right. Friedrich West Jensen asks on our Facebook page if Inter fans should be worried that all the unwanted players only, quote unquote, left on loan deals.
So I think this is a problem for a lot of teams, and not just Serie A. I mean, you look at Juve, how ridiculously big their squad is because they couldn't get rid of some good players, and the players that Inter got rid of are good players. They just weren't a fit with the culture. But look at even Manchester United, Smalling, Alexis Sanchez, and then we see Mkhitaryan on the last day. So I think we're seeing this as a problem. It's a much bigger problem than Juve and Inter. It happens everywhere at big clubs. Because here's the thing, you know, with big clubs, when they sign a player, they're paying them big wages. And then when they're not living up to those wages, you're trying to sell them to teams that are maybe a notch below. And usually those teams that are a notch below don't pay those salaries. So it's a very interesting conundrum. I think, you know, the player wages is maybe the most underrated thing in transfers now. I think people don't pay enough attention there, because once a player starts earning more than $4 million after taxes, then it's very limited the teams that can then afford to get them. So yeah, I would be concerned, but this is across the board, and I think you're seeing more and more clubs, especially at the end of the window, that are like, you know what, I'm just going to send them on loan. Let's not even worry about agreeing to an option to buy. We'll figure it out later. Kind of what Chelsea did with Kovacic, and then they just ended up signing him outright. So I think you're going to see more of those deals in the future.
Before we let you go, I want your top five, or actually I want your top six. From 6 to 1, I want to know which three sides you think are going to get relegated. Capocannoniere winner, Coppa Italia winner, and Supercoppa winner.
See, I was hoping we could just argue about Roma, you and I. Need.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to talk about that. So look, I'm not an expert on the newly promoted teams. I will say Lecce, what we saw against Inter, and then they lose at home. Or was it against Verona? They should be really concerned. Verona off to a pretty good start, but I look at that team, there's really not that many Serie A players on there. I think Verona, too, is one of those clubs that they're not that upset if they just keep going up and down between Serie A and Serie B. After that, I think Spal is in trouble. I thought Lazzari was such an important player, and we're already seeing how well he's doing at Lazio. So I'd be concerned about them. I also wouldn't be shocked if Sampdoria find themselves kind of in Fiorentina's situation from last season. I think they're in a lot of trouble there. So that's the relegated. For Capocannoniere, I mean, I hate to say it on an Inter podcast, but I have a hard time not picking Ronaldo and Sarri's system. We are seeing how many opportunities he has to score. I think Ciro Immobile, though, is a nice dark horse. I'm always a big fan of his, and I think Lazio with Lazzari is going to be really, really intriguing. For the Coppa Italia, I'll pick Lazio. I'm big on them this season. And what was the other question, Nima?
Supercoppa, and who is going to, like, 6 to 1?
Okay, so Supercoppa, I'll give it to Juve. I think they'll win it this time. Top six, I still have Juve 1 until you beat the champ. The champ, to me, still deserves to be the favorite. I originally had picked Napoli going into the season 2nd, but I have to say I've been very impressed with Inter. I'm not just saying it on your podcast. I've been saying it on mine as well. I also think Napoli sees the group in the Champions League. They have a pretty good chance of getting out of that. So I'm going to take Juve, Inter, Napoli. I have Lazio fourth. I feel really good about that. After that, for me, you have Atalanta, Roma, Milan, Torino kind of in that zone. It's kind of hard. I like Atalanta talent-wise, but I think the Champions League is going to be tough. I have a lot of question marks on Roma, with Milan.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
But I really like Torino. I will tell you, I think Torino is going to be really, really interesting because I really like their squad, and I think they made Verdi, Laxalt, bringing back Lialco, Bonifazi. So I'm going to have a surprise. I'm going to have Torino fifth. How's that? And then I have Milan and Roma and Atalanta kind of for that sixth spot.
Yeah, so people who want to follow the debate, the Roma debate between me and David on Twitter, I believe that Roma is going to finish fourth. David thinks wonders if it's John Solano who's been like playing on my head or something.
But you know what's odd is I'm very good friends with the people that run Roma social media. They're great guys. John Solano's basically a co-host on my show. I have him a lot. It's very hard for me to pick against them. But, you know, when I look at teams, rather than looking at reasons why I think they'll be good, I always look at reasons. Yeah. And what concerns me? And I just have, they have a lot of upside. Don't get me wrong. They certainly do. But I think when I look at the other teams, they have more question marks.
Well, it certainly does. And I'm looking forward to this season. It's already started amazingly. And David, if you got something coming out, something special you want to plug, or if just go ahead.
So everyone check out Calcioland. We had Nima on last week. We cover all the teams. I do have a special column recapping the summer transfer window that is inspired by a Tarantino movie that I'm actually very, very happy with. I'm going to try to put it out in the next 2 days or so. But always a pleasure to chat with you. Like a warm thank you to the Sempre Inter community. I love what you guys do. I think what you guys are doing with the site, with so many different things. I love the comics, the video and all. A round of applause to how much work you guys put into it and your community. So I wish everyone a great season, and all of you guys keep up the great work.
Thanks a lot, David. It's good to have you. Thanks a lot. You too, man.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Ciao.
Thanks, David.
Ciao.
Thanks. Right. Bye, David. Thanks. Right. That was David Amoyal, a good friend who we always try to bring on, and we always get. I'm sorry to all the questions we didn't have time to go through, but it's really difficult. David's, he's really busy, and he's really kind to come on. I was gonna say, let's talk about the. I want to go a little bit deeper into the Mercato thing. Let's talk about the players out that Will kind of alluded to before. I actually think that Marotta and Inter, I think they handled the situation just as brilliantly as they could have done, because it was quite clear that after about a month that Mauro Icardi was like this child that didn't understand that he had been misbehaving, and that his privileges had been taken away from him, his Inter privileges had been taken away from him, and he was just going to deny and make life difficult for everyone. The lawsuit certainly is a further example of that. But I think that Marotta's calm and cool in handling all of this, from Nainggolan to Perisic to Icardi, as well as all the other players that they sold, I think for me, he deserves. The only reason I give him a 7 is because they're loan deals. They're not obligations. They're all of them are with option to buy. But in your opinion, is there a situation where you think the club failed this summer or something they could have done better? Will?
Failures. There's no big cross if you're sort of making a checklist of what they needed to do. I agree that obviously it would have been more opportune to secure some kind of guaranteed payment for those three players beyond, you know, the little fee that Bayern and PSG have possibly paid to take them on loan for this first season. No, there's no big problem. I think they've shown their hands as a great set of directors, or particularly Marotta has. This was a big summer for him because he came in the middle of the season. There was a lot of nonsense about how he'd come in and destabilized the club, and it was his fault that the Icardi stuff had exploded when actually he was the one that was just trying to put things right that had been got wrong under previous regimes. I think he's had a very impressive summer. I think the impressive thing, as David said, was the clarity, the fact that they didn't actually allow themselves to be, you know, strangled by Icardi or any of the other players. They stuck to their line, and ultimately they got what they wanted. For a long time, I just thought it was inevitable that Icardi would stay, and that, you know, all this stuff about how there was, you know, they were optimistic of securing a deal and how everything was under control was just kind of talk that you know things you have to say to keep a brave face on things in public. But the results speak for them. So I find it very difficult to criticize anything. It's not that there are things that could have made the squad better. As I said, I mean, a midfielder would have been nice, but there's only so much you can do in one summer. So I'm very positive about the way they've acted, for sure.
What about you guys? Alex, do you think there's anything you want to add to that, like in terms of the negativity? Because, I mean, the positivity kind of speaks for itself.
No, I'm actually surprised how happy I am, because I say this a lot, Nima, that in most things in life, I look at the glass half full, except when it comes to Inter, I tend to look at the glass half empty because I've been burned so many times in the last, you know, 6 or 7 years. So it's hard for me to always see the positives. But, you know, the only target that they clearly missed was Edin Dzeko. Outside of that, you know, there were rumored targets, but I don't really know how hard they really pursued Vidal. I don't know how hard they really pursued Rakitic. I don't know how hard they really pursued Milinkovic-Savic. I know David talked a lot about him. So really, Dzeko is the only miss that you look at, and they were still able to find an alternative in a low-risk deal for Alexis Sanchez after that didn't go through. So I'm very happy, and I can't remember if it was David or Will who made this point, or maybe both, that really what I like most about the way that they offloaded Icardi was the fact that they were able to send him away from the Serie A, because kind of going back to the whole glass half empty thing, my skin had just been crawling for the entire summer, because I was expecting, all signs are pointing to Juventus taking him at the very end of the transfer window and either getting him at an insanely slashed sale price or getting him on loan. And so the fact that he winds up in PSG at least for a year, if they don't end up redeeming it for $65 million at the end of the year, I just think it was a superb mercato by Beppe Marotta. And I don't always say this when it comes to Inter, but I'm very satisfied with the way they conducted their business.
Agreed. Let's move on to the actual games that were played, because you wouldn't believe it if you looked at some of the stuff that goes on social media, but the transfer window is actually not the main thing in the world of football, but it's actually the games being played, believe it or not. And two have already been played. The Champions League group stage has already been drawn. I don't want to dwell too much on the Lecce game, because I don't think Lecce are much of an opponent. The only thing, I want to move on to the Cagliari game, which I think was much more interesting, because it was a game that, in my opinion, is one of those games that Inter would have lost if this was any other season of these, if it was any of the previous 6-7 seasons. It was a game where Inter struggled, Inter fought, worked their way into it, and managed to go home with all the 3 points, thanks to probably the clearest penalty I think I've ever seen in my life. Going into that game, did you expect us to? I know Mo definitely expected Inter to win that game, and he even wrote that in his pre-match preview on Sempre Inter, that Inter would win 2-1 and Lukaku and Lautaro would score. But in all seriousness, were you that confident for real when you were going into that game, Mo?
Yeah. Look, I knew it was going to be a tough match. We lost last year's corresponding fixture, and going off to Sardinia is never. I mean, we've seen what happened with Lukaku. It's a hostile environment. It's never easy to go and play and get a result there, especially with Barella and Nangolan switching sides. But I believed in my heart of hearts we would be able to grind out a win, and I thought it would be one of those matches where a clean sheet would not be kept, and that's why I figured that 2-1 would have been probably the most logical result. But you know, like I say, you know, or like you said, it's very rare for me to bet or predict against Inter anyway. So it just so happened that the result went my way and Inter's way.
Yeah, that was a good job there, Mo. You not only got the result right, you got the goal scorers right, you got them in the right order. You know, that I hope that streak of yours continues. I revived, for listeners, for old listeners of this show, I revived my own little streak, the Nima inverted jinx, because the minute I said that, the second I said that Lukaku had been bad, he scored on the penalty. So well, let's hope that we both continue our streaks. I want to ask you, Alex, what's the best thing you take away from that game?
I thought the adjustments and the way Conte was able to win the chess match. You know, Nima, you mentioned that's the type of game that Inter draws or loses, you know, last season. In fact, they did lose that fixture last season, as Mo mentioned. As far as Cagliari goes, when they brought on Simeone after halftime, they were reborn, just resurrected. The pace and the counterattack became very dangerous, and Inter had to readjust. Inter had to scramble, and then they were able to retake control of that game with their possession. I also thought that Barella deserves a nice shout, because when he was brought on, around a little before 70 minutes before the penalty and the game-winning goal, I thought that he really added the missing piece to Inter to reclaim that game. So, you know, it's nice to have good subs like that available to you. So, you know, Conte has the benefit of that. But I just thought, to me, the way that, you know, rather than losing their focus, losing their shape, you know, Inter was able to respond when, for the first, you know, five or so minutes, six, 7 minutes of the second half, it was all Cagliari. The fact that Inter was able to retake control was something I took a lot of comfort in, and it's not really something I'm used to, because it didn't really happen that way very often during the Spalletti era.
No, it certainly didn't. What's the thing that you take away, the most positive thing that you take away, and what's the negative thing you take away from this game, from the Cagliari game?
The positive is the points, as you said when you were introducing this section of the show. This is the kind of game that with Conte we'll win, and with Spalletti and whoever else before, we didn't. It was a hard match. The performance was not spectacular, but it can't always be spectacular. It can very rarely be a spectacular win away at Cagliari. They're one of those sides in the table that get a lot of their points at home and struggle away from home, so going there and winning is good. One of those wins that I don't want to really get into this discussion, but it's the kind of win that if you are going to be involved in a title race, that you look back on at the end of the season, you sort of pinpoint that as a key moment. So that was clearly the positive, the Conte's mentality, the way that we reacted, and we didn't really struggle that much towards the end of the game. The negative is that there were still quite a few signs of what used to happen under Spalletti, you know, the kind of sitting on a 1-0 lead, being a little bit predictable up front. I think on that note, Sanchez is going to be quite burdened this year, because he's got a very, very important role to play in terms of providing a little bit something out of Conte's sort of usual mechanism, something a little bit different, something more unpredictable, and perhaps just not a slightly less than optimal game management. But as I said, it's a hard game, so I go away with my glasses half full, just like Alex's is this summer.
I think you've all of you already said what I think. You've already mentioned it, so I don't want to repeat it again. But yeah, it's really reassuring when the way you said, Alex, that we have options off the bench. And we have options, like Mo said, this isn't just any old options. These are options that Conte has chosen to play in his particular system. just the way that the mercato was. So that's why this is all really, really positive. As for the man of the match, I'm keen to. I wonder if you guys, who you think that the SempreInter.com readers voted for was the best, was the man of the match, Inter's man of the match against Lecce. Just a name, starting with you, Will.
Oh, Lecce. Brozovic? I don't know. That was a week ago, Nima. I've forgotten that match. I don't know. Kandreva, because of the goal. Maybe.
Okay. So you're going with Kandreva?
Yeah.
Okay. Where, Alex?
Well, consider my thunder stolen, because my guess is Kandreva as well. I felt that way coming out of that match. It was not validated against Cagliari, but I think going back to Lecce, I think Kandreva.
Mm. What about you, Mo?
I think my man of the match against Lecce was definitely Brozovic, but I reckon probably, like Will said, because of that spectacular goal and the year-long goal drought, it was probably Kandreva.
You're both wrong. It was Brozovic. Stick with your.
Hey, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, 36.3% voted Brozovic, and he was also my man of the match. Sensi, 35%, and in bronze position was Candyman himself, 20%. Against Cagliari, I think it's no, you know, I think we all know it's Stefano Sensi, so there's no point in even saying that, because 79% voted for him. But who do you think came in second, Will?
Big Rom.
What about you, Alex?
Ooh, second. How about Lautaro?
Yumo?
Yeah, so two things. The first is I think, in my opinion, it was probably Asamoah. I thought he had a fantastic performance, both attacking wise and in defense. But after your reveal, I just want to say one more thing. Before your reveal, I'm glad it wasn't D'Ambrosio, a Santo Danilo save in the last minute off the line that made him the second most valuable contributor to the game. And that's one of the things, one of the great positives of the Cagliari performance is the calmness and assuredness by which the whole game was approached from start to finish. It wasn't a frantic finish where we needed some desperate goal line clearances to get the win. We might have won these games with Spalletti last year, but it was always in such dramatic and Pazza Inter fashion. Yesterday, took the lead, lost the lead, regained the lead, saw the match out. Simple business done, you know, and that's why it was positive. But anyway, not to digress too much, my second man of the match is probably Asamoah.
This is crazy.
Nima, let me change my answer to Skriniar. I'll go Skriniar for a second.
Okay. This is crazy because I don't know what's going on with Mo right here, but he's kind of some sort of, I don't know, fortune teller or something. He can see things and read minds. Yes, it was quite a while, Samoa, 6.3%. So I think Mo should reveal next week's lotto numbers as well while he's still going at it. Right. I just wanted to briefly, there was a Champions League draw as well. I wanted to briefly touch on that as well, just to hear your general thoughts and if you think Inter will go through. My thoughts was that this was a very, very difficult group. Again, Inter got the worst group possible, the worst draw. I wanted something much more simpler and easier, but that was just not to be. I think that Inter will go through. I think Inter will finish second, but I think that they will do so by the skin of their necks. I think Barcelona, I think we'll definitely lose to them away at the Camp Nou. I think we'll draw at home. As for Borussia Dortmund, you know, that can go either way. But one thing is for certain, Inter cannot slip up against Slavia Prague. So I'm going to say Barcelona first, Inter second, and Borussia third. And Inter will go through on goal difference. What is your take, Will?
Yeah, I'd sign up for that final table. I think we have a much better chance than we did last year, simply because the group is of a similar standard, but we're a lot better. We would have done a really impressive thing last year, making it out of that group. Of course, the way that it ended left a very bitter taste, but actually to get into that position was pretty impressive given the resources we had. This season, I'm not certain that we'll make it through, but I think that there's a definite chance for us to take points off Barcelona and Dortmund. One, because you know they have their own fragilities, and two, because these are the kind of teams that Conte can really set up against well. I remember 2 years ago when he was in charge of Chelsea, he played Valverde's Barcelona in the last 16, and he dominated Valverde in the home leg at Stamford Bridge. I think Chelsea, they got a draw, but it was because Chelsea had gifted them a goal at the end, and Chelsea had already hit the post twice, and they basically dominated that match. So I think he can, in the home game, which is obviously the last one, I think there's a definite chance to get a win there. I think the calendar is good as well, unlike last year. That's another plus. Last year, we had the Biscotto scenario because we had the easy game at the end and the other two sides were playing each other in the Camp Nou. This year, we will have Barcelona at home in the last game. Barcelona may well be through then. That gives us a chance to get a better result. We get a start against Slavia Prague, which is maybe not too bad. The Dortmund games, which are obviously the key ones, are pushed back as far as possible into October because they're third and fourth. That gives us a lot of time to sort ourselves out and get ourselves going. Also, Dortmund's fixture list around those two games is horrible. They've got the Derby, then they've got Bayern, and they've got Gladbach or something like that. So that could waste some energy from them. So obviously, it's not easy. The fixtures around those two games as well for us are pretty good. So I think that there's a good chance we'll get through. It's by no means a guarantee. There's not much margin for error, but I will be positive.
What about you, Alex? Do you think we'll go through? We know that Mo thinks we'll go through. He's Mr. Positivity, so there's no point in asking him. But no, but in all seriousness, do you think we'll go through?
Yeah, I thought very well said by you and Will. I also think they squeak through second place in the group, and it's difficult, but I feel much more equipped this season, given Conte and the players available to him to rise to that occasion. When you think about how close they were to going through in an equally tough group a year ago, I will be at least slightly disappointed if they don't go through the group this season. And one thing's for sure, having a group like that every match, you know, maybe aside from the Slavia Prague fixtures, but you know, the other four will be must-see TV, and many eyes around the world will be on Inter.
For sure. Mo, of course, Inter will go through. You're Mr. Positivity. So are you going to surprise us now and say that Inter won't go through? Or what are you thinking?
No, I think Inter are going to go through. I think Barca are a weaker team than they were last year, surprisingly. You know, despite all the reinforcements that they've done, they seem to be going through some period of managerial incoherence, whether at the board level or at the club, at the squad level. I don't buy into the whole, I mean, you know, Critty's not here, so we can speak freely about Dortmund. I don't buy into the whole Dortmund myth. I think they're a fragile team. I think their manager and their his manner in general and his approach to the game is very anti-Conte. In that he's very regimented and very system based rather than being a tactical manager. So I think Conte can over 180 minutes can get the better of Dortmund. But what I want to comment on is the fact that we think it's a particularly tough group. But if we look at every other group, with the exception of Group G, I think it is the one that's headed by Zenit. If you discount the groups where Italian teams have been drawn into, remove the pot three team and insert Inter, it'll be an equally tough group. You know, it's just one of those occupational hazards of, you know, falling into pot three. So hopefully, if we had a better run in the Champions League this year and improve the coefficient, we'll make it to top pot two, hopefully, if not next season and the season after, and we won't have to go through this again.
Hope so. I certainly hope so. Right, before we move on, I just wanted to briefly ask you which three teams will get relegated. Your 1-6, Capocannoniere, Coppa Italia, and Supercoppa winners. Starting with you, Will. Who? Go.
Juventus will win the league. I think Napoli will just stay second ahead of Inter, but obviously the first 2 weeks of the season have slightly called out into question, but I'll go with that for the now. Fourth, fifth and sixth are just a roll of the dice. I will say Lazio fourth, Milan fifth, Roma sixth. Top scorer, Cristiano Ronaldo. Relegation, Udinese, Lecce, Verona.
Mm-hmm. Alex?
Let me start with relegation. I will go Lecce, Verona, and I'm trying to think the third. I'll also go Udinese. I think that's a good shout there. Top three. Wow. I'm going to sound like Mo with my positivity, but I'm going to go Scudetto for Inter, Juventus second, Napoli third. Capocannoniere, I'm going to go... I hate to echo David Amoyal's sentiment, but I think it's Cristiano Ronaldo's year to hoist that. What were the other ones, Nima?
Coppa Italia and relegation, Coppa Italia, Supercoppa.
Okay, I'm going to go with... I'm also going to go Inter, Coppa Italia, Supercoppa. I'll go Lazio, and I already gave my relegation, so I think that covers it.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't give all of them, actually.
No, you didn't.
Did I give a Capocannoniere?
No, you didn't. And no Coppa and no Supercoppa.
I darn well hoping to win the Coppa Italia because we keep getting it all wrong in these knockout matches. So it's about time we got it right. The draws are not too bad either. So I will say Inter for that. I think Lazio will take Juve in the Coppa Italia. And I'm afraid, yeah, I can only see Cristiano for Capocannoniere. So I have to go with him as well.
You, Mo?
I think the same prediction as last year. I think 1, 2, and 3 is a toss-up. I mean, of course, I was proven very wrong last year, but I think I'm going to be right this year. I think 1, 2, and 3 is Inter, Napoli, Juve in whatever order, and it all depends on how their respective seasons pan out, especially with injuries in the Champions League. So, but no, I think it's going to be very close. Let me put my prediction. I think 1, 2, and 3 is Napoli, Inter, and Juve all within 6 points of each other. How about that? Does that work?
Yeah, that works. That works. Okay. So who 4, 5, 6?
You know, like 4, 5, 6. I think 4 is definitely Lazio. I think Lazio had a blip last year. I think Lazio have a strong project, and they've reinforced very well. I think Lazio are going to finish in the Champions League spot. I think Roma are going to finish 5th ahead of Milan, and it's I think Milan are probably going to finish outside the top 6 with Torino in 6th place. So that's my top 6 for me. Relegation, I think there's consensus on Lecce and Verona. It's a toss-up on who the third team is, whether it's Spal or Udinese. I reckon probably Spal, like David had earlier predicted. And when Sarri goes and flies off to Cristiano's yacht to promise him that he's going to score 40 goals this year, it's difficult to predict a Capocannoniere other than Cristiano. And finally, I really hope that we win the Super Cup. And if we do, we win the Coppa Italia. And if we do, we'll probably win the Super Cup as well. So
no, but then we'll play that next year. We'll play that next year. You know, I mean this year, because they haven't played last year.
This year's Super Coppa.
Juventus.
Will it be in Saudi again? Will it be in Saudi again?
Yeah, Saudi. Yeah, King Abdullah Stadium.
Let's go for Lazio again.
And for me, Capocannoniere Cristiano, I tweeted out before the show. I think it's going to be Juve, Inter, Napoli, Roma. And then I think it's going to be Lazio. And then I think it's going to be Milan. I think Torino and those Fiorentina, Torino, all the others will just finish outside. I think it's going to be really tight. I'm with Mo on the within 6 points, the top three. I'm also within 3-4 points, positions 4 to 6. As for Capocannoniere Ronaldo, as I said, relegation, I mean, no doubt, Lecce last, Hellas 19th, and Spal 17th. And as for Coppa Italia, I think Juve will win it, and I think Lazio will win the Supercoppa. Right, let's move on to the part of the show where we pay tribute, rip the piss out of, and make fun of someone or criticize someone or something in the world of football heavily, starting with this week's Moratti, presented by Mr. Positivity himself, Mr. Mohamed Nasser.
He works a lot, he's intelligent, and he surprises people sometimes with his ideas. Not easy to find one person of this qualities.
So, lots to be very positive about with the start of the season. Teams are playing well, everything's great. But I think the Moratti of the week, seeing what happened with how the transfer market closed out, has to be Marotta. especially with how factions within the Italian media and, you know, the Inter supporters and whatever have been doubting this guy and, you know, calling into question his tactics, especially his handling of the Icardi situation. And I have to say, despite him being very, non-Inter in his DNA and very, very stiff in his management style, etc., but it really is a breath of fresh air to the club, seeing how these controversial situations have been handled in such a cool, calm, and collected manner. The guy kept his cool, got Conte all he wanted, got the players out, albeit on loan, but, you know, we know they're good players, and, you know, Perisic and Icardi at least are probably going to be kept by their parent or by their adopting clubs for the season. So, yeah, I think the Moratti of the week has got to be Marotta. It's difficult to put Marotta and Moratti in the same sentence without, you know, seeing some irony in that, you know. But
these are new times.
Yeah, yeah, new times.
Old farts like you and me and Alex, we got to adjust. Right.
The Irish is not lost on me, you know, but you got to give credit to you, you know. So he's my Moratti of the week.
Absolutely. Let's move on to something slightly more comical. This week's frog, which will be presented by Mr. Alex Donnell.
È clamoroso! Autogol di Ranocchia!
Really, only one place I could go with this one. And it's not so much a frog of the week as it is a frog of the year for 2019. I must salute these individuals on their way to Paris for Mauro Icardi and for Juan Donata from misquoting Mark Twain and also misusing quotation marks while misquoting Mark Twain to his lovely, amazing agent wife, stirring the pot week after week on Tiki Taka and just making things up about someone in upper management telling Icardi that they wanted him to stay. Guys, it's been a circus for a number of years with those two, and it really ramped up after, you know, the captain's armband being taken away in January. So I can safely say this, since the transfer is done, approved, at least for the loan, I should say, signed, sealed, and delivered. I don't want to jinx anything. It's too late for that, thank God. But I have to give the frog of the year, at least the frog of the summer, to Icardi and his amazing wife as they will take their talents now to Ligue 1. So happy trails to you, and thank you for providing so many goals and so much entertainment.
Amen. Nothing to add to that. Let's move on to something much more negative. This week's Moji, which we presented by Mr. Will Beckman.
Yeah, as we said just before starting this recording, it's a pretty obvious Moji this week. Until about 3 hours before we were going to record, it was going to be Cagliari fans for their rather disgusting racist abuse that they subjected to Romelu Lukaku in the game at the Sardegna Arena. But unfortunately, it's now going to have to be Inter's Curva Nord instead. When listeners are listening to this, on Monday evening, Tuesday evening, they released a statement, which is very helpfully in English, addressed to Lukaku on a Facebook account. They wrote on behalf of the Curva Nord, and they said they were very sorry. You thought what happened in Cagliari was racist. You have to understand that Italy is not like many other Northern European countries where racism is a real, in capital letters, problem. We understand that it could have seemed racist to you, but it is not like that. It goes on and on and on. We are not racist, and so are not the Cagliari fans. Lovely English. You have to understand that in all Italian stadiums, people cheer for their teams, but at the same time, they use it to cheer against the opponents, not for racism, but to help in speech marks their team. Please consider this attitude of Italian fans as a form of respect for the fact that they are afraid of you for the goals you might score against their teams, and not because they hate you or they are racist. True racism is a completely different story, and all Italian football fans know it very well. We are very sensitive and inclusive with all people, etc. and so on. Please help us to clarify what racism really is and that Italian fans are not racist. The fight to real racism has to begin in schools, not in the stadiums. Fans are just fans, and they behave in different ways when inside the stadium as opposed to when they are in real life. I will now stop speaking because I will be unable to comment such vomit without swearing, and we're not supposed to do that on this podcast. So the motto of the week is the Court of Unord.
Thank you. No, we're not supposed to. I think my favorite part of that has got to be the part where you have to understand that in all Italian stadiums, people cheer for their teams, but at the same time, they used to cheer against the opponents, not for racism, but to help their own team.
Basically, Lukaku is 3
banana,
years old.
Banana, potato salad.
Yeah, and he's never like what? It's just the patronizing tone that makes it so extraordinarily tone deaf. I mean, there's so much to dissect in that.
But the absolutely best part of all of that drivel is Italians fans may not be perfect, and we can understand your frustration, but with these expressions, lovely English, but they are definitely not meant to be racist. Once again, welcome Romelu. Jesus Christ.
That extra welcome is such a nice touch.
You know, I think
what we can deduce from that is that, the Court of Unord knows what racism is about a lot more than Romelu Lukaku. That's what we've, they understand.
They know what it's like to be black in a white country. Unlike Romelu, who actually is black. Oh my God. There's just not more. Thankfully, we recorded after I tweeted this statement out, and my phone has been exploding. But I think my favorite response was from someone who said, "Did Donald Trump hack their Facebook account? This is the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life." That's pretty much everyone has been saying. This is stupidity and ignorance on a whole other level. Well done, Court of Unord, for taking a situation you had nothing to do with and make it all about you. That takes a special kind of talent, and you all have it. Right. That was all we had time for this week. We will be back next week. I'd like to thank David Amoyal once again for joining us. And I'd like to thank you, Will.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your international break. You'll need to rest because we have a lot of very demanding fixtures when we come back.
Indeed. And I'd also like to thank you, Alex, for coming on.
Thank you. I will not enjoy my international break because I hate how you get two games and then it's right back to the break. But I'll talk to you guys again soon.
And Mr. Positivity himself, Mr. Mo Nasser.
Hey, hey. Always great being on. Talk soon, guys.
As always, I'm your host, Nima Tavalli Ruzzari, wishing you a lovely international break and sempre e solo Forza Inter.